Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org.
Welcome back to Baptist Basics University. I am Matthew Gage. This is lesson number 13, the final lesson in our series in the book of Daniel. And we'll be covering Daniel chapter 11, verse 36 through the end of the book, chapter 12, verse 13. And the title for our lesson is The End Times. So finally, I'm recording this almost like 4 months after I finished teaching this in Sunday school, running a little bit behind on the recording, but finally looking forward to getting this series wrapped up and move on to our next series, which will be on the life of Christ. But we're going to close the book of Daniel today, and let me go ahead and review chapters 10, 11, and 12 of the book of Daniel. Are really one story, one narrative. Chapter 10 is Daniel's preparation for the vision he receives in chapters 11 and 12. And for us today, about the first half of that prophecy has been fulfilled. And that's what we covered last week. And what we're going to see here is, and what we're going to look at here is, the prophecy that for us has yet to be fulfilled. And beginning in verse 36 of chapter 11 through the end of the book are things that have not been fulfilled for us yet. Now, I will go ahead and mention that it's a little bit, I kind of made it sound the previous lesson and that it's a pretty good cutoff right there in verse 36. Really, verses beginning verse 36 is almost got a dual fulfillment. It still kind of could be talking about Antiochus Epiphanes, and it kind of is also talking about the Antichrist. So it's a little bit of both. And the first part of Daniel chapter 11 is remarkably precise. I mean, we went on and on about these marriages and alliances and wars and all these things that happened in Daniel chapter 11. It's remarkably precise, but beginning verse 36, it's difficult, if not impossible, to lay down a definite historic fulfillment. We can't open up the ancient historians. We can't open up Josephus or somebody like that and say, hey, look, this is what it's talking about. And Bible commentators will tell you when they get up to this point, you know, it's easy to look back at history and find fulfillment. But beginning verse 36, it's difficult. There are some things you can, other things you absolutely cannot. So there's three different conclusions that we can come to with this. That one is that this passage was fulfilled historically in Antiochus Epiphanes, and that, you know, that message continues on as it was doing ending in verse 35, and all this stuff happened, but we just don't have record of it. That there is a possibility of that. The other is that this passage is wishful thinking of the writer and not true prophecy. Well, we've seen the preciseness of the previous verses. I believe the Bible. I believe God. I don't believe that this is wishful thinking. I believe this is Holy Scripture. This is God-breathed, and that what it says has happened or will happen. So I reject that. But the third is most likely that this passage is unfulfilled prophecy, and that, you know, though it has not been fulfilled like everything else up to verse 35, it will be fulfilled. So personally, what I think is happening here is there's not really a great precise cutoff, but there is definitely a transition that takes place. And we jump from Antiochus Epiphanes to the Antichrist. And we've already noted in chapter 8 that there's a lot of similarities between these. We've already seen the same jump and transition take place. So, you know, between Antiochus Epiphanes and the Antichrist. So this transition, you know, would be quite natural here. Also, chapter 12, the division when they made the chapter divisions in the Bible, those were not original. But when they made those, really beginning chapter 12, verse 1, it is very clear that's end times. So it would be quite a jump from chapter 11 to chapter 12 in this prophecy, and a very abrupt jump if there was, you know, if this was all fulfilled and all of a sudden jump to the end times. It makes for a lot better transition as if, excuse me, as if we transition from Antiochus Epiphanes to the one he foreshadows, to the one he is so similar to in the Antichrist that's yet to come. We jump across the eons of time in these two similar characters. And then, you know, we jump from what was fulfilled 2,500 years ago to what is going to be fulfilled in the future, maybe the near future. So that's some of my thinking, some of my explanation on this. And what we're going to deal with even at first in this unfulfilled prophecy portion is a lot of it is, a little bit vague. It's not going to be precise, like, oh, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. There's going to be a lot of just character. It's just going to be a little bit descriptive, especially this first portion we talk about. When we're talking about the character of the Antichrist, and it's not as precise as what we were dealing with before. I'd say there's a little bit of a change in tone, a little bit of change in structure that takes place from, what precedes this portion in chapter 11 to what follows here. So, anyway, let's go in. We'll just go ahead and just jump right on in. I will quit rambling and we'll just jump on in and cover this. Verse 36, chapter 11 of Daniel, verse number 36. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. For that is determined shall be done. I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and we'll go ahead and read down through verse 39. We'll read this entire passage and then we'll go through. Verse 37, neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above all. Verse 38, but in his estate shall he honor the God of forces, and a God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things. Verse 39, thus shall he do in the most strong holds with a strange god, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. Okay, so who's this king we're talking about? We were talking about Antiochus Epiphanes up to this point, up to verse 35. Now we've jumped ahead and we're talking about the one that Antiochus Epiphanes is a type of, is a foreshadow of. In prophecy, we're talking about the Antichrist. And here we get a lot of glimpse, a lot of detail into the character of the Antichrist. We'll look about him. So what we see, says he shall do according to his will. That's ruling through absolute power, that there's no one to stop him, no one to check, no checks and balances. You know, the American system of government, we have the three branches of government, legislative, executive, and judicial, and those have checks and balances against each other to make sure one does not get too powerful. Well, in this case, we're talking about a dictator. We're talking about a ruler with unlimited, unbridled power. And he, whatever he wants to do, he does. It talks about he shall magnify himself above every god. Not just going to claim that there is no god. Not just going to claim that he is a god, but he's going to be better than any god. This is a claim of deity. It's also anti-religious in a way. But this cult of personality that's going to come about with the Antichrist, and really, I mean, it's all about him and worshiping him. He's not going to be humbled even before God. But he's going to put himself above religion, above gods, and probably to the point of claiming deity. Talks about he shall speak marvelous things against the God of God. So it's not just going to be enough that he will put himself as a god, but he's going to viciously attack and blaspheme the true God. It also says, he shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that that is determined shall be done. Why does evil exist? Why does evil happen? Why does there have to be an Antichrist? It's all part of the plan of God. And we trust his higher wisdom and his in his power and in his authority, and we trust, you know, in him. But the Antichrist has a role. Antiochus Epiphanes had a role. Hitler had a role in God's ultimate plan. And looking back, we may be able to see it. We can kind of see, the Antiochus Epiphanes, as dark a time as that was, helped reestablish the Jewish state, helped reestablish Jewish identity through the Maccabees. We can see Hitler and the Holocaust helped to really, honestly, help to establish the Jewish state, helped to bring it about. And the Antichrist, it's going to be very similar with him, his role is going to help usher in the millennial kingdom. Verse number 37, he's not going to regard the God of his father. So he's going to turn against heritage and identity and be something wholly new. See, now this is where we see that this really isn't talking about Antiochus Epiphanes. Antiochus Epiphanes did claim deity. He claimed that he was something of a god. But to turn his back on all other religion, now he did attack, Judaism. He attacked other religions, but to really develop something totally new, he didn't do that. So that's what this guy does. The Antichrist is turns his back on heritage, identity, and tradition, and forges something wholly new. Talks about the desire of women. He's not going to regard the desire of women. There's a lot of interpretation that I've heard it said that this is proof that he will be a homosexual. I don't get that. I've seen it said that if you study out history, that this desire of women revolves around certain cults that would have been prominent around Syria. I don't know about that either. But think about it in the Jewish sense. This is a Jewish book written to Jewish people that revolves around the Jews in Israel. What's the desire of women? The desire of women was to be the mother of the Messiah, and that he's going to have no regard for that hope, no regard for that. And maybe also this could also be that he's so unmovable. What's one thing that'll move a man is the tears of a woman. And, that's the one thing, what steers the heart of a man, a woman. They say, what's behind every great man? A great woman pushing him along. So, even mother, women, wives, girlfriends, whatever, no one can change this guy's mind. That could also be there. So that's a little bit unclear, but I would lean towards probably this is referencing the, he's not going to regard the Messiah, the hope for the Messiah. But goes beyond that. He's not even going to regard any God, which I think goes back to pointing to what's he talking about? Well, something has to do with religion or God. So, he claims to be greater than all of them. Now, it talks about there in verse 38, in his estate, he shall honor the God of forces. literally translated, I've seen this, forces will say, well, he's New Age. It's kind of like the Star Wars, the Force. And this is New Age kind of religion that he's promoting. Literally, if we translate this, that word force can be translated fortresses. So perhaps his God is just human power, human military might. Where does he put his faith and trust? In human ability, in the human power, in the human military. No one can crush him, not because of higher powers. He says he is the highest power. And where does he put his faith and trust? In that he has the biggest army. He's got the biggest guns. He's got the most tanks. He's got the most soldiers. So, that's probably along the lines of what that's talking about. And let's see, what else can we look at here? Talks about honoring that with gold and silver and precious stones and pleasant things. Well, what's he going to fund? Not religion. He's going to fund his army. And we'll say a lot of this is speculation because we don't know. It has not been fulfilled, but we're getting a little glimpse of it. And when we see the ultimate fulfillment, we'll be like, oh, well, yes, of course. That's what that really was talking about. You see a shadow and you think, what is that shadow? And you can't quite, it's like, well, it kind of looks like a person. Maybe it's not. And then you realize, oh, it's just your child's toy that's sitting in front of the nightlight. And, it's like, it wasn't a monster. It wasn't a person. It was just a G.I. Joe action figure right there. We see the shadow and we do our best to make out what it is, but until we actually see the object revealed, it's a little difficult. So some of this, I'm just throwing out ideas and throwing out theories. I don't know. The Bible commentary you have doesn't know until we have the sureness of the fulfillment of these prophecies. It's as good a guess as anybody's. Let's see. Strange God. He shall acknowledge and increase with glory. So what's he going to do? Acknowledge. This is talking about rewarding, increase with glory. That how's he going to gain support? Through rewards, through political means, just like we talked about with Antiochus Epiphanes and his masterful use of politics and bribes and rewards. Well, it reminds me of Napoleon supposedly said, you know, give me a spool of ribbon and I'll rule the world. And part of how he developed Morales' troops was giving rewards for everything. And people seek after rewards. It's funny that people do this now. Video games are designed around this. Xbox, there's achievements. Like, oh, if you do this, you get this achievement. Well, what a lot of people want to do? Well, I want to get that achievement. I want to do all those things. Even though it's silly, it's stupid, that sense of achievement, that sense of honor, that sense of reward. In fact, video games now, the psychology of it is based on that, you know, to addict you into playing all that. There's a lot of thought and put into that. So, I mean, that's just an example to maybe a very poor one in the broad scope of things to talk about, but it really does give us a glimpse into human nature. And that's how things work, how people work. Verse number 40, we're going to transition into a final war over Israel. Verse 40, and at the time of the end, what's the time of the end? We're talking about end time. So definitely right here, we've jumped across a couple of millennia time, and we're talking about end times events. The king of the south shall push at him. Now, who's the king of the south? Is this the Ptolemies? Well, they're kind of not still around. Very possibly this is talking about Egypt, though. And the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind. Who's the king of the north? Is this Syria? A lot of people see it as being Russia. I'm just saying, I don't know, but they say it's possibly Russia. Shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. Okay, so what's happening here? John Wolford, in his books on end times and on prophecy, he sees this as a multi-front rebellion against the Antichrist. The Antichrist has set up his base of operations, his capital. He's in Israel, and he's going to be attacked by from the south, from the north. And I mean, not just, you know, protests, but armies attacking. And the timing of these events is probably the midpoint of the tribulation period. Remember, the first 3.5 years are pretty calm, but the midpoint is where things really go crazy. And this would fit in with that, as what happens is this rebellion against him. So from the south, Egypt, from the north, Russia, maybe, or maybe it is a reestablished Syria or something like that. But they come in. So what is the Antichrist response? It talks about here that verse number 41, he shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. But these that escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. So what happens is he comes in, reinvades Israel after this rebellion, takes him out, kicks him out of the land. He comes back in a fury and reinvades and kicks out the rebellion. The glorious land, what's that talking about? Well, I would love to say it's Texas, but it's not Texas. It's Israel, okay? The Holy Land that we're talking about there. So he comes back in. And notice it talks about he's going to spare some people. Who does he spare? Edom, Moab, Ammon. Who are they? Well, that's Old Testament people. You might remember, you know, from the book of Judges and Samuel and things. But who are they? These are the Palestinian people that are around today. You know, what's one of the big things now? Peace in the Middle East and peace between the Palestinian people and the Jews. Well, that's still going to be around in the end times. One of the reasons why I think the end times may not be that far off, because we already see that being a major subject. So some reason he's going to come in, and as he comes in and just is whooping up on everybody that has rebelled against him, he spares the Palestinians. Why? I don't know, but for some reason he spares them. Verse 42. He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So, in retaliation, Egypt is one of the, probably, the kingdom of the south. They led this rebellion. So he says, okay, well, I will teach you a lesson. And he goes right down in there and conquers Egypt. Verse 43. But he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. So, I mean, well, he goes in and takes over the riches of Egypt. Now, Egypt is not a powerful country necessarily in our time, but there is still a lot of money there. There's still, there's oil, a lot of historical treasures there. But so, I mean, it may not be the same as conquering a highly developed, rich nation that we would consider now, but still, there is a lot of power, a lot of wealth in Egypt. Let's see here. Talks about the Libyans and the Ethiopians being steps. I mean, right outside that, I mean, he might just keep pushing. He doesn't just conquer Cairo. He doesn't just conquer the capital. I mean, he's conquering the entire region and pushing on into the into Africa. That's what the Ethiopians and the Libyans. Verse 44, but tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore, he shall go forth in great fear to destroy and utterly to make away many. So what happens is while he's down in Egypt, it's going to come down, he's counterattacked, possibly the regrouped army of North. Now, we can skip ahead into the book of Revelation, chapter number 9, and it looks like I have a typo in there, but Revelation chapter 9 probably talks a little bit about this, that there is a, let's see here. Probably, well, I've got verse 31. It can't be verse 31. I think that should be verse 11, maybe. Wow. I hate it when I get a typo like that. Maybe it's 13. I bet that's supposed to be 13. But anyway, it talks a little bit that there's a war. There's a third killed by fire and by smoke and brimstone and... So anyway, the possibly fulfillment of that. In fact, I'm just going to go ahead and change that in my notes there to 13. Chapter 16 also of Book of Revelation, chapter 16 and verse number 12. The great river phrase, the water there is dried up, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. That may be this counterattack that comes in. Excuse me. So... we see even in the book of Revelation, like, well, where does this fit in? Well, there's little clues there that are given about this war and maybe even a counterattack, that there is this coming in from the east, a counterattack. Some people see China in that. But anyway, so it's not wholly unfounded in the more full, more revealed timeline that's given to us in the book of Revelation. Let's see here. In verse 45, and he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. So, between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, the glorious holy mountain is, it's talking about Jerusalem, probably talking about Mount Moriah, the Temple Mount. That's where he's going to reestablish himself. Between the seas, probably talks about the Dead Sea and the Mediterranean Sea. Some people say the Sea of Galilee, but probably the Dead Sea and the Mediterranean Sea, because that would give you a lot better precision to point to that being Jerusalem. But what's a holy mountain? The closest thing to a holy mountain in Judaism is Mount Moriah, the Temple Mount. But notice he's going to come to his end. What's that end? Armageddon's going to come, and the Antichrist will be defeated. So this is setting up, all these events are setting up for the final battle of Armageddon. So that wraps us up chapter 11. So let's go ahead and we'll jump right on in chapter 12. Chapter 12 and verse 1. And at that time shall Michael, remember who've already met him, he's the archangel, seems to be like over Israel, shall stand up. At that time Michael stand up, shall, I can't read. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation even to that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. So we get a glimpse here of what's coming in the end of the tribulation, that Israel will be delivered, but it's going to be a very dark time, just like the times we saw under Antiochus Epiphanes, where he tried to stamp out the Jewish religion, made it illegal, death penalty to be a practicing Jew. Similar things are going to come back here in the end of the tribulation period. But there will be some delivered. It's predetermined that some be found written in the book. That's talking about salvation and the sureness of it, that God knows who will be. Verse 2. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake and come to everlasting life and to shame and everlasting contempt. So we're jumping way ahead here to the, that what's going to happen there. We're jumping even further ahead to the resurrection, that the righteous, the saved, will be resurrected to the reward, the dead to their reward, to punishment. In verse 3, and they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. So the focus there is on those pure, those that are true, those that are holy, those that love God, and the glory that awaits them, that God shall give to them as their reward. And think about it, it's in context, it's those that have gone through these terrible times and the horrors, the terrors that they face, the martyrdom they may have to face, but the glory that will await them is God still sees what they do and will reward them as such. Verse number 4. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. So this is characteristics of the end time. This is Daniel, some of this is not going to be revealed. Some of it's not going to be known until the very end. And I'll tell you, that is something, what the description that's given here, that people shall run to and fro. I've heard people say, well, that's because we'll be traveling and, jet travel. You can fly across the land of Israel now in just minutes in a supersonic jet. But I think this is probably people searching. They want to know. They want to know the truth. They want to know what's coming. And it talks about knowledge being increased, that knowledge in general. Think about how much we know today. I mean, I can get on the internet and find out practically anything I want to know. All the things we study, we know more today than any other time in human history. And it's just discoveries and things are being made every day, almost every hour. So, that knowledge is increased, but I think really this is focusing more on knowledge of the end times, that as during this time, leading up to this time, more will be known, more will be revealed. And I'll tell you, honestly, as someone who loves books, as someone who loves commentaries, as someone who loves the history and heritage of the Christian faith, of the Baptists, when it comes to the book of Revelation, when it comes to prophecy, when it comes to end times, the best books aren't old books. Most of the time, they are not very good. I give a pass to most commentaries that are over 100 years old because they are usually not very good, especially when it comes to the book of Revelation. A lot of Baptists were that way. I have B.H. Carroll's an interpretation of the English Bible commentary, and I enjoy it. I get a lot from it. Don't necessarily agree with him 100% of the time, but when it comes to Revelation, he's not very good. Spurgeon was not very good. So there's a lot of great men that I love and I respect. When it comes to Revelation, they didn't have a clue. But starting in the late 1800s, when the movement came, the premillennial movement, and when people really started studying the prophecy literally, there was great progress made and a lot of light shone down onto the prophecies. And I think right now we have as good an understanding of prophecy as any point in history. And part of that is because I think things are setting up we understand more because it makes more sense. When the Bible says every eye will see, well, it makes a lot of sense. Everybody's got TVs, everybody's got cell phones, and everybody could literally see something, you know, because it could be broadcast throughout the entire earth. Different elements like that, different details, even the political nature. You know, think about it for, 2,000 years or so, there was not a Jewish state. And so why would it matter that, why would it matter, you know, all these prophecies about the Jews being back there in Israel? Because they weren't there. There, you know, was a little remnant of them, but, you know, they didn't have power. They weren't a majority. So, you know, all that now it makes a lot of sense because the Jews are there. The Jewish state's been reestablished. There's so much of it that just makes so much more sense nowadays. And when it comes to prophecy, a lot of people, they prophesy it through their times. You read people that wrote about prophecy around World War II, and they see Russia and they see Germany, and they see a lot of that involved. And they could end up being right, but they interpret it through their own time. And that's part of the thing I think that people had a hard time understanding is the political, especially the political nature of things. It just didn't make sense until recent years, especially since the Jewish state was reestablished. I think, you know, since that point, a lot of this makes a lot of sense, and we can actually see this happening. We can understand having a one world ruler. There's people that want that nowadays. So, you know, it makes a lot more sense. So I think when we see that, I think what that verse is talking about is characteristics of the end times, leading up to the end times, during the end times. I think during the end times, after the rapture, there will be people searching for answers, and they're going to stumble across the Bible. And I think they're going to be there understanding what's going to happen. Those believers alive during that time, they're going to understand what's happening. They're going to understand the time period they live in. So I think that's what that's talking about. Excuse me. Verse number 5. Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood an other two, the one on this side of the bank of the river, and the other on the other side of the bank of the river. In verse 6, and one said to the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? So, all right, so now the angels finished talking, delivered. Daniel now sees, and there's a river, and there's people on either side of the river and a guy in the middle of the river. And he said, well, how long is this going to be? Well, what's he talking about? He's talking, what's going to be discussed is the tribulation period. Verse 7, and I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever, that it shall be for a time, times and a half. And when he shall have accomplished this to scatter the power of the holy people, and all these things shall be finished. So how long is it going to take for all this stuff revealed? A time, times and a half. That is 1 + 2 + 1/2, 3 1/2. The great tribulation period. Now we say this tribulation is 7 periods. The terrible part, the great tribulation itself, is 3 1/2. It's the last half of the tribulation period. So that's what that's talking about. Time, times and a half, 3 1/2, 3 1/2 years. Verse 8. And I heard, but I understood not. That's what you're saying right now. I hear you, but I don't understand. But it says, I heard and I understood not. Then said I, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? So it's like, God, I still don't understand. Could you give me a little bit more? This is one of the great things. You know, God, you may not understand everything, but a lot of times if you call out to God, God will increase our wisdom. God will increase our understanding so we can understand more. Daniel just is very honest. Says, God, I don't understand. What's 3 1/2 have to do with anything? So God's going to reveal to him a little bit more. Verse 9, he said, go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. So once again, we're, you know, saying, hey, you don't need to understand this now. This is for the end times. This is what we're talking about, things that are thousands of years in the future for you. Verse 10, many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. So, once again, looking forward, you know, kind of the fates of the people, that there will be the pure and holy, there will be the wicked, there will be those that are rewarded life eternal in heaven, those that are rewarded with death eternal in hell. So, get a little glimpse of that. But it, basically the focus on that is, yes, as hard and as terrible as the times look, there is still holiness. There is still believers. There are still those that love God. Verse 11, "And from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days." Tell what, we'll go ahead and read the last two verses. "Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,335 days. But go thou thy way till the end be, for thou shalt rest and stand in thy lot at the end of the days." And I partially weighed in the last verse, but let's focus on verse 11 and 12. This is some interesting little details when it comes to history. So we see in verse 11 that the fulfillment, the end, will be from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, the abomination of desolation. It's going to be 1,290 days. So from that time to the fulfillment to the end, will be, and that's about 3.5 years. That works out pretty good. The abomination desolation will happen about halfway through the tribulation period, so that works out pretty good. But in verse 12, we have a different date that's given. "The blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,335 days. We'll say that instead of the really flowery language there. So we have a difference of 45 days. So what's the deal? Using a prophetic calendar, which I believe we've talked about with the Daniel 70 weeks, the prophetic calendar of 360 days, 3.5 years is 1,260 days. So both of these are a little bit longer. There's an extra 30 days. That'd be an extra, 75 days for the second. So what's going on here? What's this extra time for? Well, this is what what's going to happen. There's a lot of things that will happen. And though the end of the tribulation may be with the defeat of the Antichrist, the actual establishment, practically speaking, of the millennial kingdom may not be instantaneous. It may take some time for the actual establishment, there's practical reasons. Plus, there are some things that need to happen. Matthew chapter 25, verses 31 through 46 has a judgment of the nations. There's going to be a judgment of Israel according to Ezekiel chapter 20, verses 34 through 38. Plus, they're going to have to cleanse the temple. The temple's going to be there. This is something that hadn't happened. They're going to have to rebuild it. But the temple's going to be rebuilt. They're going to have to cleanse it because, it's been made desolate. It's been profaned by the Antichrist. So that's going to take some time. According to, in fact, one of the few times I could find a date on this, and really a few times it even happened, but under Hezekiah, they cleansed the temple. In 2 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 17, it took 16 days. So that may account for some of this time period, this extra time period that's given there. Plus, there could be just practical necessities that are given. But it does seem that this timeline, verse 11, the time probably that from the end of the abomination of desolation probably to the defeat of the Antichrist, till that is done away with and the temple is begun to be restored, that's going to be the 1,290 days. But then in verse 12, it talks about, till the blessing. So that extra 45 days, I think, is the time period between the defeat of the Antichrist to the establishment of the millennial kingdom. That's the actual blessing. And that 45-day period is transition, is setting up, is preparation, time for these judgments, times for cleansing the temple, and time for just getting things in order for the rule and reign of Christ on earth. So, and finally we'll end, I'll go ahead and reread it. I jumped a little bit ahead of myself, but verse 13, we'll close out the book of Daniel, chapter 12, verse 13. "But go thou thy way till the end be, for thou shalt rest and stand in thy lot at the end of the days." So the final message given to Daniel is, Daniel, everything's going to be okay. You've done your work. You've been a good and faithful servant. Now it's time to rest. And Daniel, up into his 90s at this point, an old man in the last days of his life, is told, "It's okay, Daniel. You know, go to thy rest, sleep. Go, you know, that's for death. For Christian, death is not an end. It's something we face. It's a rest from our labors on earth, but it's also to be, you know, to be absent from the body, be present with the Lord. You know, it's to go on to our reward." For, well, we'll get into Old Testament theology. That probably is him going to paradise, and probably not straight to heaven. Boy, we could so chase so many rabbits right there. We're not going to get into it. But basically, it's like, you know, time's rest. But in the end, there's going to be a resurrection, Daniel. In the end, you're going to stand again with thy lot. Now, what is thy lot? There's a couple of theories on that. One is, well, you're going to have the righteous and unrighteous, and those will be resurrected, some to life, some to death, some to reward, some to punishment. So Daniel, you're going to go in your lot, the redeemed, the righteous, the pure, the holy. That could be that. Also, he's a Jew. So maybe the lot refers to with his tribe, that he's going to be resurrected and even still in the Jewish culture back in with his tribe and reestablish Israel during the millennial kingdom. So I could go with either one of those. I would say probably lean more towards that the lot is the righteous, but you could go either way. So there we go. We close out the book of Daniel. We've covered thousands of years of human history. We've sifted through the sands of time to re-examine ancient cultures. We've looked at rulers dead and gone for thousands of years. We've looked at kingdoms that have fallen so many years ago, their names have almost forgotten to history. But through it all, we see that God is faithful. We see that God is holy. We see that God has a plan in the affairs of man, that God is in control, and that God has set up this system. God has set up this timeline for things to happen. And Daniel got to see a lot of the inner workings of God's plan. He got to see this progression of powers that would come. He got to see details about rulers and kingdoms that would come. And he got to see in thousands of years into the future to what's going to happen for things that for us, we may not even experience. Things that we may not even see in our lifetime, to be honest. Things that will be fulfilled during what we call the end times. And when those are ushered in, the tribulation period and the Antichrist and the Antichrist defeat, and on in maybe even to a little glimpse of the millennial kingdom. But the breadth and the scope of the Daniel is amazing. Daniel, just an amazing individual. One of the highlights of studying the book of Daniel is studying the man. What an amazing man. What a truly blessed man he was, an example to us all. But the prophecies, just the amazing, amazing prophecies revealed in just 12 short little books. You know, it's amazing. We divide up the prophets into the major prophets and the minor prophets. And the major prophets are the ones that wrote big, long books, Isaiah and Ezekiel and Jeremiah. But Daniel, even though his is a little bit shorter, he's considered a major prophet. Why? Because the scope of the prophecies are so tremendous. So we wrap up the book of Daniel. I appreciate you listening. Boy, if you've made it through all these, I really thank you. I hope they've been a help to you. I hope that you've learned something as we've studied this. I'll be the first to admit, I do not have all the answers. When you're dealing with prophecy, especially, I don't think you will have all the answers. But we can learn a lot, and as we look forward to things that will come, we get just a little bit of glimpse of what will come. And anyway, I will quit rambling. I appreciate you listening today. I appreciate you making it through yet another series and being patient with me if you've been keeping up for the weeks and weeks that have gone between some of these recordings. But wrapping up another series, wrapping up another study of a book, an entire book of the Bible, which I feel very pleased and very satisfied in being able to knock out. And honestly, I think I've done a decent job of introducing this to you. I've just scratched the surface on most of this. You can go into so much more depth, so much more detail, and but I feel like I've done justice in just introducing these subjects and introducing these topics and just giving a base interpretation of this book and of these scriptures to you. So, love to hear from you. You can email me at podcast@baptistbasics.org. Check out the other resources. Check out if this is the first series that you've jumped in on Baptist Basics University. Check out some of our other studies. We've gone through the book of Acts. We've gone through the book of John. We'll do many more in the future. Next time, what I'm doing now in my Sunday school class, we're going through the life of Christ. And I'll give you a little bit of a preview of it. What we will be doing is going through the life of Christ chronologically, not through Matthew, not through Mark, not through Luke. We'll be going through all of it and trying to establish a pretty decent timeline and talk about everything going through and just studying who Christ was, what he did, the significance, the culture, the history, a lot of stuff in that. Now, I'm enjoying it. I've had a lot of very positive feedback for it in Sunday school, and I can't wait to really get start recording those. I'm already, I think, 5 or 6 lessons in at this point, so pretty behind when it comes to recording, but I can't wait to really get into that. And something that's one of the original things I wanted to study and put out a podcast series on, even when I was podcasting, didn't know I was podcasting. But one of the original Baptist Basics University topics I wanted to do was this, a chronological study of the life of Christ. And no, we've already covered a lot of ground in the book in our study of the book of John. We're going to go into so much more depth in the entire life, the entire chronology of the life of Christ. And I am enjoying it immensely. I hope you will too. So look for it. Hopefully not be months before I get those lessons out and recorded. And by the time you hear this, hopefully it just be a matter of, I've been trying very hard. I like to release these every week or two if I can. But it's just sometimes hard for me to get some time to record, get peace and quiet like I have this morning. So, look for those coming. I really think if you enjoy these lessons, if you enjoy our look, especially the history and the culture and the things that I get into, I think you'll really enjoy our study of the life of Christ. So you'll have that to look forward to. So, I did actually think about doing the book of Revelation, but I was so burned out on prophecy after the book of Daniel. I just couldn't imagine doing another big prophetic study. I'm like, I need a break. So instead, we're going to do this big, huge, long, no telling how long this is going to take me, study on the life of Christ. And then we'll see where we go from there. Maybe we'll do Revelation. Maybe we'll do something else. So anyway, I appreciate you listening today. Email me, podcast@baptistbasics.org. Check out the other resources. Follow baptistbasics.org on Facebook. You can find the link on baptistbasics.org. That's where I will put announcements up when things are when new things are available, when new podcasts are available. You can also subscribe on iTunes. If you search on iTunes for Baptist Basics University, you'll find me. You'll find this series, and you can subscribe through there. I've got some directions to the websites. If you don't have iTunes, if you don't have an iPhone, there's plenty of other options out there. There's some more information on that. If you go to baptistbasics.org and click on the podcast link, I've got some information. If this is totally foreign to you, there's programs you can get to automatically download podcasts and download these series when they become available. And there's a lot of great ones out there, and a lot of good Bible teaching, a lot of good teaching I've had some struggle with, but there's some good preaching and things out there. This is not the only option out there. Honestly, it's something if you like to listen to audio, so there's a lot of preaching you can download, but podcasts are just amazing because it's automated. You just download it when it's available. You can automatically have it downloaded and listen to it. And, something I've come to love and enjoy. And if you're listening to this, you may very well be the same way. So, anyway, I will shut up. It's time for me to go on. So I appreciate you listening today, and such a relief to be done with the book of Daniel, finally get these recorded. I hope it's been a help and a blessing to you. I hope that you have enjoyed it even half as much as I have. I am Matthew Gage. I will see you next time.